An oil man is looking to build one of the largest landfills in Texas on ranch land near the border city of Laredo. I'm Joey Palacios, and this is Fronteras, a public radio show about the issues in states along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. The dump site would be one of a few in Texas accepting a specific type of toxic industrial waste that could be shipped from states across the country and Mexico. The developer promises safety, but as Texas Public Radio's Aaron Schrank reports, a growing chorus of critics and residents say importing toxic waste puts their community at risk.
Eduardo Davila moved his wife and kids from Laredo to a colonia 20 miles east because he thought the fresh air would be good for their asthma.
After 2 years, the asthma had disappeared completely because the air is pure here. We want this unpolluted environment to continue to exist.
Now Davila and a dozen of his neighbors are meeting in a home just downwind from what could soon be the garbage capital of South Texas. Most are wearing red t-shirts with the words "No Landfill" printed on them. Hundreds of families live in these communities, and they're worried.
No lo queremos aquí.
We don't want it here, says Olga Carrasco. The landfill will welcome what's called Class 1 industrial waste, which regulators say poses health risks when mishandled. Felicita Samaniego says when she first heard about the project, she was shocked.
I felt that I needed to fight for my kids. They're coming out with this, that they want to bring trash and contaminate the air. I don't have money to take my kids to the doctor. I don't have money to move with them. I'm alone with my kids.
Drive 5 miles from here down unpaved roads, and you're on a pancake flat stretch of land called the Hugo Ranch. 660 acres of this could soon be filled with stuff like coal ash and fracking waste. Developer C.Y. Benavides III plans to bring the waste here by truck and train from across Texas, other states, and Mexico.
It's location, location, location. The number one inland port in the world. I think that the nation and the world are looking at disposal in a very different way, where waste by rail is the future.
Benavides says the clay-like conditions here will keep contaminants out of the water table, and the remote location makes his site safer than the city dump closer to Laredo.
So this is more or less the middle of where the landfill would be. We would be right in the middle.
It's nothing but prickly pear cactus and mesquite trees as far as the eye can see, aside from a few roofs peeking out from neighboring ranches. Laredo is 20 miles away. Benavides says his Pescadito Environmental Resource Center will provide 45 jobs and meet Laredo's waste management needs as its population booms.
It's going to be an economic shot in the arm for the community.
Webb County's two existing landfills bring in about 400,000 tons of waste each year. Benavides plans to eventually bring in more than 9 times that amount. 20% can be that Class 1 waste. Opponents of Benavides' bold venture include some neighboring ranchers, as well as thousands in Laredo who've signed petitions against it. Benavides says many detractors are confused.
There's a difference between hazardous and toxic.
He's right. While some of the waste in Pescadito will be toxic, it's considered non-hazardous by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, or TCEQ, as long as Benavides does things like line the waste pits and cover the waste to keep air clean. The TCEQ is the group that decides whether this landfill happens. Back in March, it granted a draft permit.
All landfills eventually leak.
Tricia Cortez is the executive director of the Rio Grande International Study Center.
You have these liners, you have these barriers, but they just delay the inevitable.
She doesn't oppose the landfill outright, but has pressing questions about water pollution, air emissions, health risks, and the possibility of contaminating the Rio Grande.
60% of it is in floodplain. There are two tributaries that make their way into the river.
Okay. All of these issues were raised at a packed public hearing with the TCEQ last week. Colonia resident Alejandro Obregón was pleased to see most of the hundreds there were against the landfill planned near his home.
Nosotros nos sentimos discriminados.
We feel discriminated against because, sincerely, if there were a different class of people living here, they would not be putting this landfill here.
Obregón's neighbor, Pablo Lemos, says the state shouldn't have to shoulder more than its share of waste either.
I don't know why they're making it so that trash from so many states will be brought here.
Don't mess
with Texas.
Like they say, don't mess with Texas. They say they want to keep Texas clean. Texas is going to be a dump with the way they are making it.
Folks in the back, I'm hearing a lot of chatter from the back.
The contentious public hearing also exposed some potential problems with the landfill application. Benavides' plan to remove the landfill from the floodplain had been approved by federal and county officials. But Webb County Planning Director and Floodplain Administrator Rhonda Tiffin said inconsistencies in his permit applications mean the approval is not valid.
If the applicant were to come today and request a permit, the floodplain development permit, I would have to deny it. It is not complete as designed.
And while the TCEQ had approved a preliminary permit for the landfill this year, the commission says it's now reversed course and is taking another look at Benavides' application. The Pescadito landfill permit is expected to go before a full administrative review hearing before any final decisions are made. Aaron Schrank, Texas Public Radio News.
That was Texas Public Radio's Aaron Schrank reporting. Now to Tijuana, home to a growing community of U.S. expatriates. Their mothers trying to keep their families together after their partners were deported. Now the women face lengthy waits at the border. A trusted traveler program could expedite the crossings. It's called Sentry, Secure Electronic Network for Travelers Rapid Inspection. But there's a hitch. Jean Guerrero of KPBS reports the government won't let the mothers use it.
Bridget Borges is used to waiting hours at the San Ysidro border crossing. But for her three children, it's torture. The family lives part-time in North San Diego County. When Bridget's husband Eduardo was deported to Mexico 12 years ago, Bridget considered moving everyone to Tijuana. But her oldest son, Aaron, has autism. Bridget felt she had to keep him in a U.S. school.
I said he doesn't speak Spanish. He has difficulty in learning, and he won't be able to make it out there.
Aaron says he hates saying goodbye to his father every time.
I miss him so much. And it makes me so sad.
Bridget recently applied for the Sentry Trusted Traveler Program, which would let her cross the border in a fraction of the time. But the border agent told her she didn't qualify because she was married to a deported man, making her high risk.
I got emotional there. I did start to cry, and I said, look, if it's an issue where you think I'm going to try to cross him through Sentry, it's not going to happen. I go, I know the risk. I'm not stupid.
She says she wouldn't risk jail time because her children depend on her. U.S. Customs and Border Protection declined to comment. Immigration lawyer Nicole Ramos says the agency regularly denies Sentry to people with deported spouses.
So essentially, you have the U.S. government punishing these families twice.
Ramos says there's no policy prohibiting spouses of deportees from getting Sentry, but that they're regularly denied it because of concerns they'll try to smuggle their husbands across the border. She says these are the people who could most benefit from Sentry because of their cross-border lives.
I know women that have developed back problems while sitting in line, women that have developed anxiety problems from sitting in line.
One of those women is Alicia Lopez, who works at the San Ysidro Health Center and lives in Tijuana with her children and their Mexican father. Lopez is the primary breadwinner in her family. She tells me about a recent five-hour wait at the border, trying to pass the time by flipping through radio station after radio station.
I had a breakdown. I just had an anxiety attack. And to shake that off at work, it took a few hours. It did linger.
She says she's afraid of losing her job because she's never sure she's going to make it to work on time. Lopez also applied for the Sentry Trusted Traveler Program. The border agent told her she would never qualify because she was married to a deported man.
I have no criminal record. I have nothing on my driving record. I have nothing. A good employment history, everything.
Bridget Borges recently drove back to Tijuana to reunite her children with her deported father, Eduardo.
Go with us.
Oh, no. Let me help you.
When she's here, I feel good. I feel a family. The house feels different. I have my kids.
Eduardo was deported months after marrying Bridget for a drug offense he'd committed decades before as a young man. He had since become a pastor.
It was a challenge, and at the same time, I was sure it was a challenge I had to overcome. If I really believed in God, I was going to be able to succeed. Otherwise, my faith was not real faith.
Eduardo says the hardest part is not being able to play an active role in his children's U.S. lives.
I've never had the happiness of taking my son to school. All of that, I missed it.
Bridget plans to reapply for Sentry, in case the next border agent sympathizes. For Fronteras, I'm Jean Guerrero.
Coming up on Fronteras, a campaign to get young Pacific Islanders to apply for President Obama's deportation deferral program known as DACA.
There's a definite stigma amongst the Asian community of revealing yourself and saying, I am here without papers.
And New Mexico debates paid sick leave after this. I'm Joey Palacios, and this is Fronteras. According to the American Public Health Association, a lack of paid sick leave contributes to the spread of disease and emergency medical costs. It's an issue that affects a lot of states. Currently, there are no federal legal requirements for paid sick leave. But some states and cities have passed their own. Marisa DeMarco of KUNM reports that advocates in Albuquerque collected enough signatures to put the issue before voters in November.
Even though she's worked for the same company since 1999, Veronica Serrano doesn't have paid sick leave.
The choice is to either get paid or not get paid, and I'd rather pay my bills.
She conducts water audits and goes to people's houses to figure out why their bills might be so high. She helps find indoor and outdoor leaks. She feels guilty when she shows up sick, she says, and tries to use a lot of hand sanitizer.
It keeps perpetuating sickness. No one ever really gets better because we're so easily passing it around because people can't stay home.
Sometimes when her daughter is sick, Serrano has to take her to school anyway because as a single mom, she can't afford to stay home from work. She's like nearly 40% of Americans, most of them low-wage workers, who don't get to call in sick and still get paid. But pretty soon, Serrano will have no choice. She's going in for surgery in a couple of days, and she'll have to stay home for between 4 and 8 weeks. She's been doing the math on how long she'll have before they turn off water and power.
Because I know what I'm going to do is use all my money to pay my mortgage. I can live without water if I have to. You know, I can live without lights if I have to. And I'm concerned that I could lose my house.
Under an ordinance that might go before Albuquerque voters in November, all workers in the city would accrue an hour of paid sick leave for every 30 hours worked. But the measure is too long to fit on the ballot, and city and county officials will have to decide whether an abbreviated version can be printed instead. Even though there's no law in place yet, Kenneth Carson Jr., who owns Nexus Brewery, already offers paid time off to his employees, including servers and cooks.
And so far, we've never had anybody abuse it, but everybody does use it.
Nexus workers get between 5 and 15 paid days off, depending on how long they've worked there. Nexus also picks up half the tab for medical, dental, and vision.
It's just an expense that I just have to budget for, and we just do it.
Now, you really don't have to do this. So what was your impetus to pay that extra expense?
Well, okay. Part of it's selfish because I think if I treat my employees well, they'll stay longer and they'll work harder. The other reason is I just feel like it's something that should be a part of the benefits that are provided for anybody that actually works for me or works in this industry. Having people walk around here sick because they can't take off doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Would you rather have your salary or would you rather have 5 days of paid sick leave?
That's the choice Roanne Sexton put to her employees because she says that's the choice she's facing. She owns an assisted living facility for elderly folks with dementia. If the ordinance goes into effect, it's going to cost her business $40,000 a year. Sexton runs on tight margins, she says, so she would have to cut into employee pay to make paid sick leave work.
100% said they would rather have their salary. Please don't take our salary away. I pay my staff more than the average for this industry, like $2 and $3 more.
Business associations around the state are expressing concern that this ordinance would make Albuquerque unattractive to companies looking to move here and would rack up legal fees as existing local businesses work to come into compliance with the new law. Plus, Sexton adds, the expense could shut down a lot of the smaller companies in the assisted living industry.
We're going to see a lot of closures, and I think that's very sad. my concern is going to displace many elderly people who need this service.
Sexton says that the ordinance would have a huge impact on the many small businesses that make up Albuquerque's economy. Reporting from Albuquerque, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
This is the fourth year of President Obama's DACA program, which stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. DACA allows undocumented young people who were brought to the United States illegally as children to apply for a two-year deferral from deportation. A new report shows California has the highest number of eligible DACA recipients, but ranks 11th in the number of applications. Maureen Cavanaugh of KPBS spoke with Erwin Mendoza of Alliance San Diego. It's a group encouraging Asian youth to apply before President Obama leaves office.
So when you have DACA, it allows you to have a work permit, and which allows someone to work legally here in the United States.
And go to school?
Correct. So go to school, get a driver's license here in California. So it offers better opportunities for young people qualified for deferred action.
Now, most of the immigrants in California who've applied for DACA are from Mexico, Central, and South America. But relatively, there's been few from Asian countries. Why is that?
So there are actually roughly 3,000 Asian immigrants here in San Diego. So what we're doing at Ready Now San Diego is that we're outreaching to these populations to get them to apply for deferred action and DACA.
Why has there been this hesitancy among undocumented Asians from applying for DACA?
I think there's two parts to that. There's a definite stigma amongst the Asian community of revealing yourself and saying, like, I am here without papers. And then the second part is the fear of coming out to the federal government and saying that I'm here without papers. And so part of that is in what's affecting the Asian population. So we want them to come forward and help them better their lives with the Ready Now San Diego campaign.
And what is Alliance San Diego with the Ready Now San Diego campaign? What are you going to do to try to boost these numbers?
So right now we have a full-time staff member dedicated to Asian Pacific Islander outreach. So that person is making phone calls, taking meetings with different leaders in the communities. And we're also talking to ethnic media to help us amplify those Korean, Filipino populations and Chinese populations as well.
And how do you push back on the concerns that people from Korea or the Philippines might have about applying for this program? What are you telling them?
We're telling them that it's okay to come step forward because we want them to know about the programs and that there are relief programs to help them come forward and better their lives through the programs of DACA and other available immigration relief options.
A lot of people who have applied for this program have said that it has really improved their lives. It is just broadened up their lives so that they feel like they're a part of the community. Have you heard that as well?
Yeah, and I think working with the various Latino youth right now, we're hearing a lot of great stories that they're going to college, that they're getting a better paying job. They're comfortable to drive around from getting point A to point B, to school, to work, wherever. So this is a great opportunity for Asian youth to take advantage of this program so that they can have the same opportunities that Latino youth are taking advantage of right now.
Now, this is the fourth year of DACA, which is a program initiated by the Obama administration. What happens to it when the president leaves office?
So we knew that DACA was always going to be a temporary program. This was always going to be dependent on the president. So it's up to us to hold our leaders in Congress accountable for really effective and efficient immigration reform. The president's done all he can, and so it's up to us to push forward on immigration reform.
Perez, a Republican presidential candidate, Donald Trump, gave a speech today on terrorism and immigration. Is there any chance, do you think, DACA would be continued under a Trump presidency?
We understand that in any election, even this one, is that it's still about supporting the immigration reform in Congress, and that provides a permanent solution. Whomever is president in this upcoming election will have a say, but it's up to Congress still about how they and how they act on immigration reform.
So what you're trying to do is instead of putting your efforts on continuing this particular program, mm-hmm. is to try to get Congress to move towards some sort of comprehensive immigration reform.
Right. So that, I mean, that's the end goal. In 2012, DACA happened in an election year. So it's still about getting to our Congress people, getting them to pass a comprehensive immigration reform so that these undocumented populations don't have to worry. They don't have to rely on candidates who are speaking to them about various immigration relief and passing it or not passing it.
Do you think the uncertainty about DACA and its continuation is maybe stopping some people from applying for the program?
Oh, we recognize that fear, but we still want to outreach to those populations, those hard-to-reach populations, about getting to apply to DACA, and especially the Asian Pacific Islander populations. Like I said before, we're looking at, 20-25%, and that's over the last 4 years. So it's about reaching to those populations and having them step forward to apply to DACA and different action.
That was Maureen Cavanaugh of KPBS speaking with Erwin Mendoza of the advocacy group Alliance San Diego. And that's it for Fronteras and our stories from the Southwest this week. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org. Alexis Yancey produced this broadcast. Shelley Koffler is our executive producer. Chidanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Thanks for joining us. I'm Joy Palacios of Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.